condemnation on slavery morphed into outright support. In 1732, Georgia became the last of the original 13 colonies, and founders envisioned it as a Christian utopia where European inhabitants would have freedom of conscience when it came to religion. In line with this vision, James Oglethorpe, the colony's administrator, determined that Georgia would be a slave-free region. Oglethorpe and his supporters were not concerned with abolition, however. They simply wanted Georgia to be a settlement where poor Englishmen could labor without competition. On a trip to Georgia in 1738, Whitfield began planning for what would become the Bethesda Orphanage. Influenced by Methodism's focus on charity and caring for orphans, as well as by a visit to a Lutheran orphanage in Germany, Whitfield found an ideal setting for a new venture in the small community of Savannah. In time, the evangelist raised enough money for some land near Savannah. He named the new orphanage Bethesda, or House of Mercy. To this day, it operates under the name Bethesda Academy. Yet in the 18th century, the orphanage struggled to stay open. Due to mismanagement and its inability to generate much income, the fate of the orphanage was constantly in question. Faced with the vicissitudes of starting a nonprofit organization and ensuring its financial viability, Whitfield looked to slavery to secure Bethesda's welfare. He turned to the wealthy allies he had gained during his revivals in South Carolina for support. With the help of his friends near Charleston, Whitfield purchased a 640-acre plantation and planned to use the profit from the crops produced there to support the work of the orphanage. Whitfield was virtually guaranteed a profit from his plantation activities because he did not plan to pay his laborers. "One Negro has been given me," he wrote in a letter. "Some more I plan to purchase this week." Whitfield began petitioning the political leaders of Georgia, which had been founded as a free territory, to allow slavery. He suggested that allowing slavery could improve the financial fortunes of the land and claimed that economic ruin was the only alternative. "Georgia can never be a flourishing province unless Negroes are employed as slaves." Historian Stephen J. Stein insists that financial concerns only partially explain Whitfield's advocacy of slavery. The focus upon contrast and change in his ideas, which has dominated discussion to date, obscures a more significant feature of his thought, namely his deep-seated fear of the blacks. The economic impulse for slavery can never be separated from the racist ideas that typecast enslaved Africans as dangerous and brutish. Whitfield and countless other white Christians imbibed beliefs that encouraged fear and suspicion of African-descended people. A few months after the Stono Rebellion in September 1739, Whitfield and a party of companions made their way through South Carolina. On a dark and moonless night, they stumbled across a group of enslaved black people. One of Whitfield's companions asked for directions to the gentleman's house whither we were directed. But the group of blacks seemed not to know the person or the location of his home. From these circumstances, one of my friends inferred that these Negroes might be of those who lately had made an insurrection in the province and were run away from their masters. After that, Whitfield's party quickened their pace fearfully, expecting to find Negroes in every place. Virtually any gathering of black people, even when black Christians congregated for worship, was likely to elicit suspicion. Jonathan Edwards. As significant as George Whitfield was to American religious history, he was still British. America needed a homegrown pastor to celebrate as their own hero. Many Christians looked to Jonathan Edwards, heralded as America's greatest theologian. A Calvinist pastor in Northampton, Massachusetts, Edwards emphasized the need for a new birth and authentic conversion. Instead of focusing solely on the intellectual nature of religion, he spoke of a change in affections, redirecting passion away from oneself and toward God. Edwards defended the emotionalism of revival.